I do want to note that this committee will always meet at 10 o'clock on Friday from now on, because we have session at 8:30 on Fridays. The other days, we still meet here at 8:30 until such time as we get enough of a workload to move it up to 8 o'clock. We're going to open a public hearing and work session on Senate Bill 241. I'm going to ask Judith to make a few comments, and then anybody who wants to make some brief testimony is welcome to do so.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. Senate Bill 241 comes to us from the Department of Agriculture. The measure eliminates the sunset provision for certain civil penalties imposed for quarantine order violations, control area violations, failure to pay timber products health program fees in a timely manner, acting as an unlicensed nursery stock grower, dealer, or agent, or acting as an unlicensed Christmas tree grower. We do have a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact on the original measure. You also have at your seat at the dais the Dash 1 amendments. Those do replace the original bill, and instead of eliminating the sunset, it extends the sunset for 2 years. I did provide Oregon 1999 Oregon Laws Chapter 390 a copy of that at your seat for your easy reference, because that's what this bill addresses. On the Dash 1 amendments, we have received a no revenue and a minimal fiscal impact on the Dash 1s. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Sean Miller, will you come on up? Have a few words of wisdom for us before we proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Sean Miller, I represent the Pacific Northwest Christmas Tree Association. We are in support of Senate Bill 241 with the Dash 1 amendments that has been drafted. The civil penalty authority was given to the Department of Agriculture in 1999 through a bill. We didn't have a chance to look at that. It was sunset in 2001. We did extend that sunset, and they are starting to utilize that. We do feel that they need to have that hammer over their head to be able to go after some folks that are unlicensed. However, the Christmas tree industry feels it's very important that we look at this and see how they're using this authority, and that's why we support extending the sunset two more years instead of eliminating it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Daniel.
Chair.
Yes.
They have not used this authority yet in all these 4 years?
Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, actually they have. They've sent out some letters. What originally happened in 99, when it did pass, the rules weren't created till 2001, so we did not have a chance to look at it. But since then, in the last few years, they have sent out some letters. Mr. Hilburn is here with the Department of Ag to actually talk about what they've done. But again, we don't feel that they've used it. That there's not enough experience in the program for us to actually study it and utilize how they're using it. So, again, we do support it, and Dan is here to probably talk about the last 2 years.
Senator Fisher, we did go over that the other day, and I was comfortable. I hope you will be, too. Go ahead. I'm going to ask Dan Wells from the Nurseryman to come up for a few words.
Mr. Chairman, Board, I'm Dan Wells with D. Wells Farms and Nursery in Hubbard, also Government Relations Chair for the Oregon Association of Nurserymen, and I would just like to say that we support the Dash 1 Amendment and that we go along with what it says.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Chuck Craig, Dan Hilburn from the Department. Good morning, Chuck. Glad you're here.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair. For the record, Chuck Craig, Deputy Director with Department of Ag, and with me is Dan Hilburn, the Administrator of our Plant Division. Mr. Chair, there's been quite a bit of discussion of this already, and so we're providing written testimony for the record. Don't want to repeat it, but the question did come up about how often we had used the authority, and so far we've gotten to the formal stage of telling people six times that we would be assessing a civil penalty if the violations that they were doing didn't stop. And Dan can provide you with some specific examples if you'd like to go into that, but we're sort of at your disposal.
So. How about briefly one example or something like that?
This is Dan Hilburn. I'm administrator of the Plant Division, Oregon Department of Agriculture. I'll give you one example. This is a Umatilla County control area, which was set up to prevent people from abandoning orchards and having the orchards become a source of injurious pests. We had a person who failed to apply early cover sprays in spring of 2000. The trap catches in that orchard were very high for coddling moth. Hand-delivered notice was given to him that he had to comply with the regulations or remove his orchard in the summer of 2000. In spring of 2001, the exact same thing happened. He did not apply his cover sprays. Again, the trap catches were very high for coddling moth, and again, a hand-delivered notice to comply with the rules or take out his trees. He refused both times and did not comply. We finally sent him a proposed imposition of civil penalty, which said failure to correct this violation within 30 days will result in imposition of a civil penalty. And willful violation of a control area is considered a major offense, so the fine would be $5,000. He had a right to request a hearing, which he did. We held that hearing, and we clarified which trees were involved. And in January 25th of 2002, the last letter in my file is to thank him for complying with the regulations, taking out those trees, and we withdrew our proposed imposition of civil penalty at that point.
Thank you. I think that makes it clear how this works. Thank you, gentlemen. Scott Ashcombe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Scott Ashcombe, representing today the Oregon Agriculture Alliance. We support Senate Bill 241 as drafted. It may be the shortest bill ever introduced in the Oregon legislature. We'd also support the Dash 1 amendments. I just wanted to clarify one aspect of civil penalty authority for ODA and what its usefulness really is. If ODA has civil penalty authority to enforce, for example, restrictions of a quarantine in the state, then ODA's plant safety and health program is viewed by other states and other nations as being a credible plant safety and health program. That can be used as a tool to cause other countries such as Canada or other states to lift quarantines which they impose against plant material coming from the state of Oregon. That's the real importance and the real advantage of having civil penalty authority for ODA is the credibility that it gives to ODA in enforcing quarantines and other plant safety and health restrictions within the state. And that can be very, very useful to the industry.
Thank you. That is a good clarification to have. Any questions? Okay, I'll close the public hearing and open a work session on Senate Bill 241.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I move the Dash 1 amendments into Senate Bill 241.
Senator Beyer has moved the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 241. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? Well, let's just make that unanimous then.
Chair.
Yes.
I move Senate Bill 241 as amended by the Dash 1s to the floor with a due pass recommendation and put on the consent calendar.
Okay. Senator Beyer has moved Senate Bill 241 to the floor with a due pass recommendation as amended. Okay. I'm still forgetting these words. I'm going to ask the clerk if she'll call the roll.
Senator Parkin? Senator Fisher?
Aye.
Vice Vice Chair Byer.
Aye.
Chair Shields.
Aye.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I will carry it and probably should declare potential conflict of interest.
Unless you...
As I'm a licensed Christmas tree grower in the state of Oregon.
Yes, unless you want to branch out into new things. Excuse me. So we'll close the work session on 241 and open a work session on 242. Judith?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. If you'll remember, Senate Bill 242 comes to us from the Department of Agriculture. It allows the department employees to inspect and certify processes used in connection with horticultural and agricultural products. It does authorize the department to adopt rules. It adds seeds, bulbs, and tubers that are not nursery stock to the definition of those products. It does allow the department to collect fees for the additional inspection and certification processes and those services for inspection, and specifies that the fees will be deposited in the Department of Agriculture Service Fund to be continuously appropriated to the department for enforcement of related inspection statutes. We do have no revenue impact on the measure. The bill is in the governor's budget. You will see the Dash 1 amendments at your seat, and they simply add an emergency clause that would make the measure effective on passage. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Judith.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Is there a fiscal? I see it says may have fiscal but not yet issued on the...
Judith?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Byer, I actually do have a message that the fiscal is coming down right now from their office. In talking with Judy James previously, I had seen an indeterminate fiscal impact, but with the indication that it is in the governor's budget. But if you'd like to wait a moment and see the actual fiscal, it's being delivered as we speak.
Mr. Chair, I guess I would, I'm not afraid to just move the bill. I'd just like to see, in the casual conversation we had in the hall after the hearing last week, it was indicated that potentially it was going to take an additional 1 or 1.5 FTE in the department. And I wanted to know if that would be reflected in the fiscal or if they have had any clarification of that at this point in time.
Chuck, can you respond to that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I believe that's correct.
Come on up, sit down.
Jim Kramer, both of you. Department of Ag, for the record, and Jim Kramer, administrator of our Commodity Inspection Division, is with us. And as I recall, the fiscal did call for an additional 1.5 FTE, didn't it?
Yes, it did, Mr. Chair. Senator Byer.
Well, I guess only that to the extent that when that was brought up last week in the hall, and Jim wasn't there, but Chuck and I was talking with Greg Bennett, who was here at the last hearing, I think that surprised him as a user of this. He was under the assumption that the department was going to be able to do this within existing resources. And so I guess, do you have any comment for that? Do the people in the industry realize that it's going to take extra people to do this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Byer, for the record, I'm Jim Kramer, administrator of the Commodity Inspection Division, Oregon Department of Ag. We will actually be using the existing people that we have, but we'll be dedicating them or moving them from a position that they're already currently doing. So will we be hiring extra people? The halftime OS2 clerical would be the potential actual hiring of a new additional staff member.
So the effect would be that it would maybe be at most a half an FTE rather than 1.5 since you're moving the other?
Mr. Chair, Senator Byer, to explain this would be to say we had some one-time specialty crop grant monies that was given us to develop for marketing purposes Oregon commodities. And under those one-time funds is where we have dedicated that one person to do the work currently. And so those funds were to have expired October, and we had a little bit of an extension on that. So the person that's currently doing that work for the GAPs and GHPs and working with some of the industry groups would be that person. So the truth of the matter is that we would end up, if this bill passes and the fiscal goes through, we would end up hiring that person as requested in the fiscal.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure we had that on the record, and because, as I said, that Mr. Bennett, who was here last week, was surprised when he found out that it was going to take additional FTE, so I just wanted to make sure that people do realize that this isn't without a cost to them, because they will be paying for the program.
Okay. Senator Fisher, you have any questions?
Not with
us. Okay.
With that, I would move the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 242.
Senator Beyer has moved the Dash 1 amendments to Senate Bill 242. Is there any discussion? Is there any dissension? In that case, so adopted.
Mr. Chair,
yes.
I move Senate Bill 242 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Beyer has moved Senate Bill 242 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. As amended, any discussion at this point? If not, I'm just going to ask the clerk to call the roll.
Senator Corcoran? Senator Fisher?
Aye.
Vice Chair Beyer?
Aye.
Chair Shields?
Aye. So Senate Bill 242, as amended, is passed. Who would like to carry this? Bill, would you like to carry this? Senator Fisher, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And with that, something that people seem to be waiting for, we're going to have a public hearing on shellfish bill, Senate Bill 99. I'd like to open that public hearing on 99, and Judith is going to give us one of her usually perfect, concise, brief, and yet all-encompassing descriptions of the bill.
You live up to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll do my best. Senate Bill 99 comes to us from our Vice Chair, Senator Beyer. The measure requires a person to have an angling license in order to take shellfish. It does define shellfish in the measure and authorizes the taking of shellfish by persons holding either an angling license or a combination license. It does allow the State Fish and Wildlife Commission to establish seasons and limits for the taking of shellfish. This measure does have a no revenue impact we have in hand. We do have a notice from fiscal that of a potential fiscal impact, but this measure does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And with our usual courtesy to members of the body, I'm going to ask Joan Dukes if she'll come forward to testify first. This is a public hearing. We won't be having a work session, but I want to get Senator Duke's perspective on the issue, since she represents a good chunk of the coast that we're talking about.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Joan Duke, State Senator from District 16, which includes the North Coast, Tillamook and Clatsop counties on the coast, and a few others further interior in the state. We've talked in this body and on the coast for a number of years about the possibility of a shellfish license or paying something in order to be able to take shellfish. It truly is probably one of the last things in the state of Oregon that you can do without having to pay a fee. And we talked about it, and over, in fact, about probably at least 10 years ago, I introduced a bill and got appropriately flogged by a whole lot of people up and down the coast. And there's a growing interest in it, but from some emails that you may have seen, I've gotten them, I believe they were copied to me, so you may have seen them. The interest at least in my part of the coast, is increasingly on a separate shellfish license as opposed to using the angling license, which is in Senate Bill 99. And indeed, I have a bill being drafted that would create a separate shellfish license. The reason for that is, in using the angling license, as Judith just said, there's no revenue impact from it. And it depends on who you talk to. Some people will tell you that most people who dig razor clams and take crabs recreationally already have a fishing license. I disagree with that. There are a lot of us out there who there's a certain group of people who just love to go dig razor clams on the coast and may or may not have a license. And to those people, you're saying, we're going to charge you. We're going to get you to buy a fairly expensive, especially if we pass the increase that's proposed this session, a fairly expensive license, but the money isn't going to go to the resource at all because fishing license money doesn't go to help shellfish. And as we've been making cutbacks, there's more and more of the programs that should benefit shellfish that are being either eliminated or reduced. And so what the bill that I'm having drafted calls for a $5 resident shellfish license fee and a $15 out-of-state non-resident license fee, and the money is dedicated to the resource, to a shellfish biologist position that we used to have. We used to have a lot of things before times got tough. It was the only shellfish biologist position that we had on the coast. To the shellfish excuse me, I carry a frog with me every day in my throat. To a shellfish inspection program that's at the Department of Agriculture. We moved it from the Health Division to the Department of Ag a number of years ago to try to save it. They've done a yeoman's job with it. Without that inspection program, we cannot open the beaches to harvesting clams. We cannot open the waters to recreationally taking crab. We cannot ship oyster growers can't ship their product out of state. Neither can the folks who commercially ship out crab. None of those shellfish can be sent out of state without the inspection program in place, and it is running a shortfall at the moment. The other thing is, we're all aware in this building, is that we have fewer state police. Well, probably reasonably so, but some of my constituents would disagree with you. Those folks aren't going. Those are the folks that some of them that used to be enforcing the bag limits on shellfish and doing some of that. So one of the first things we lose, of course, is some of the fish and wildlife folks. So what I'm talking about is a proposal that restores the shellfish biologist, puts the needed additional funding into the inspection program, and gives us some OSP enforcement. Without OSP or some kind of enforcement that's legal on the beaches, I mean, today we've got people who literally go down, dig their 15 limit of clams, and go back home, change clothes. Usually they forget to change the vehicle, and they go back in the same vehicle. Although I was talking to state police about one guy changed his clothes, changed his vehicle, had different bucket to put his stuff in. He forgot to change the dog, and they caught him that way. It was the same dog. And there are terrible stories about Sunday night dumpsters in motels full of clams, because people will go down and part of human nature, I guess, and dig more than they should be. That's not good for the resource, so we need the enforcement. So all I'm saying is, if I have to go home and explain to my constituents that they are now going to be charged, those who don't have an angling license, a fee by the state of Oregon to be able to go out and dig clams or put a crab pot over the bridge in Seaside with their children to bring home a crab, then I also need to be able to explain to them the benefit that they're getting. And it needs to be something for the resource, and not that they're going to, it simply is going to go into the agency and we hope for the best. So I think we can work together, and I think we can come up with something that will work. I'm not a big fan of let's go out and slap more fees on people, but I think that this one has some justification behind it, and I would be happy to work with you on it. Okay. Thank you.
Other questions, June? I had a kind of a question based on all those emails that you referred to earlier. And that was, I don't know how many hundreds, it seems like hundreds of emails I've got about from people who are, and it's not this subject, although one person was very specific about shellfish and the fact that, you know, he travels a lot. You might have seen him in the paper. He's the one that landed a 408-pound halibut up in Alaska this summer. He was in the news a couple of different times. But he was specific about everywhere he goes up and down the West Coast, you know, you always have the license, mm-hmm. except here. But his emphasis and a lot of other emphasis is let's make sure we keep hatcheries open. Is there any way to massage this so that a little bit goes for hatcheries as well as all this other stuff that you want? Or is this just not within your perspective of a possible? Give another.
It would be a stretch to put a fee on people who take shellfish and have that cover a non-shellfish item.
Okay.
They're pretty picky about that. Now, there is a proposal in the House to increase the fishing and hunting license fee. And if that goes through, some of that money, we expect. I don't think there's any guarantees in this process, but we expect that some of that money will go to help coastal hatcheries, which are the ones we're having the problems with,
because
they're general funded.
Well, this guy knows about coastal hatcheries. In fact, he actually volunteers at a hatchery. And
probably in Tillamook.
And so is he the only one that's wanting this shellfish license to also impact hatcheries?
Oh, no. But there may be some confusion. There's a very large group of anglers and hunters in Tillamook County in particular. They're up and down the coast, but particularly in Tillamook County, because I attended a meeting with about 500 people, and when they voted on a shellfish license, first they voted on whether or not they wanted to increase the hunting and fishing license, and the hands all went up. Then they voted on the shelf having a separate shellfish license with the money going to shellfish, and the hands went up for that as well, and then they went on to other things. But the meeting was called for some explanation as to why we were proposing to close hatcheries and some discussion with ODFW about that. It was part of the regional meetings that they held around the state. And so people have kind of, in Tillamook County, have often linked the two. We want to do both of these things. We want to increase our hunting and fishing license fee in order to be able to help the hatcheries, and we want a shellfish license that we can, where we can help the resource. Tillamook Bay has a lot of clams in it, and a lot of them are taken recreationally. There are water testing programs that the Department of Ag is presently having to cut back on, and they're working partnerships with local folks to do that, to pick up some of it, but they're very aware down there that they could lose a whole bunch in terms of being able to harvest.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you for coming, Senator
Dukes. You're welcome.
Appreciate your time.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I'd like to explain my rationale for the bill, if I may. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Roger Beyer, for the record, State Senator District 9. This bill is introduced by me, and Mr. Wayne Van Dyke, who's requested, is here in the audience to speak to it. But I guess I would like to say that my reason behind this bill, and I would differ with what Senator Dukes just said about a separate shellfish tag or dedicating the dollars to a shellfish biologist. And the reason I would differ is that currently a fishing license in Oregon, just about all it buys you is the ability to buy tags, same with a hunting license. I think that by allowing or just making it part of the general fishing license, it would enhance the value of the fishing license as a standalone item. Also, as a hunter and a fisherman and someone who, you know, I'm happy to pay the fees that I have to pay to do those recreational ideas, I'm also, my dollars are supporting many programs that do not benefit what I am actually hunting for or fishing for. The Department of Fish and Wildlife is charged with protecting the resources of fish and wildlife in the state of Oregon, not taking deer tag dollars and protecting deer or managing deer and then taking elk tag dollars and managing deer and protecting, you know, with the exception of there is a hatchery harvest tag now for the purpose of harvesting hatchery-grown fish. That is probably the one exception where the dollars are dedicated to a specific resource. But, I mean, as a hunter, I'm paying for the support of all endangered species protection that the Department of Fish and Wildlife does, none of which are hunted. As a fisherman, I'm supporting the, you know, the program for all fish, whether they be fish that are taking for commercial value or recreational value or not. So I think that my thought on this is that I would not prefer to see a separate license for shellfish. I think that a general license and the money would go into the general budget of Fish and Wildlife Department to be used to benefit all resources in the state, not specifically shellfish. I think shellfish, I mean, Senator Dukes makes a good case. We do need to take a look at shellfish and the resources there. But I think shellfish are also very resilient, and they've proven that, you know, in spite of us, they thrive. And so that's where I'm coming from on this bill. So I just, you know, I guess Senator Dukes and I will probably continue to have conversations and see if we can work out our differences on that specific of the bill.
Thank you, Senator Beyer. Everybody in the audience has now been treated to two senators who both have a very articulate rationale for their perspectives on this bill. And we're going to hear from a lot of citizens.
Mr. Chair, I forgot to make one point. I do agree in one place with what Senator Duke said. I think that just having a fishing license required will generate additional dollars, because if you've ever been to one of the Gearhart or North Coast beaches on a good razor climbing tide, you every other day you see an enormous amount of Washington residents on the beach digging.
How much?
18% of the shellfish people are Washington residents, because they can only dig razor clams every other day in Washington, and a license is required. So they dig the one day they can in Washington, and then they come to Oregon the next day when they would not be allowed to dig in Washington. So I think the money, I think the tag, just as a general fishing license, would generate quite a bit of revenue. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Well, let's continue. We've got lots of people. Since Wayne Van Dyke is the one requested this bill, I'm going to ask him if he'll come up first and share his perspective with us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Wayne Van Dyke. From Mount Angel, Oregon. I represent nobody but myself or the citizens of the state, and basically I would echo Senator Beyer's statements. This bill was started, what, this is the third time now that we've come up with this? Ahead of that, I had gotten a hold of Representative Soa, who was involved with this committee, I believe, ahead of that time. And every other state on the United States coast has a shellfish license, or has the necessity to have a license to take shellfish. If you go up into Washington, you buy a $20 tag, and you can only fish every, or I think you get a 3-day license, you can fish every other one, so you only get 2 out of the 3 days that you can use. I feel we're giving things away. We have been a very generous state. We are giving, now, like I said, we're giving it away in too great a quantities, and as the population increases, there just isn't going to be enough resource to pass around. As you will see with the other game hunting licenses, you run drawings where your chance of drawing a particular tag may be every third year or every fourth year or beyond that. The shellfish license will provide money, which is not particularly dedicated, but will go into the Department of Fish and Wildlife Fund. I believe they say it will fund at least one more shellfish biologist to work on the coast. I realize that they need to work with the Department of Agriculture to determine whether the shellfish are edible or not. I further recognize that their restriction of money has closed areas in the southern part of the state because nobody knew whether the shellfish was good or bad and didn't have the money to check it. Perhaps the Department of Fish and Wildlife should use these funds and contract the service of checking these shellfish rather than dedicating percentages out. I do not buy off on giving percentages out because the percentage may or may not cover, or it may create a surplus for the service that we would be getting. Basically, you got my words.
Okay.
Anything else?
Are there any questions? Thank you for coming and sharing with us. There's one person that came close to 100 miles, and that's Shirley. How do you say your last name? I don't want to kill it.
Lovely.
I can't say it, and you've even given me a chance. Do you want to come up and share with us a little bit?
I made copies. I didn't know if I was supposed to give everybody a copy or not.
Yeah, did you hand them to the...
I didn't.
Okay, just hand them to the young lady over there, and she'll pass them out.
And then I added a few things after.
Okay.
My name is Shirley LaViolette, and I am the owner of a small business on the Oregon coast for the last 24 years on Nehalem Bay. We employ 3 full-time people and 3 to 4 part-time people in the summer. Now, I know these licenses take a lot of paperwork because I used to sell all the licenses from the hunting, the fishing, everything. I now only sell the one-day ones, the $8 ones. I know in the paper they said that they were $5, $5.50, and they were going to go up to $9.50. That's a mistake as far as I know. I sell them for $8. And because of all the paperwork that this involved, I mean, it literally takes another person one whole day in the summertime to do the reporting. And I can see people paying $8 for a shot at getting a salmon. I mean, that's a big trophy thing. I can't remember ever hearing of a trophy clam or crab they'd want to have mounted. Last year, I sold approximately 150 one-day licenses, and I think I still have a few left in my last book. And we rented thousands of boats, thousands, not one or two, but over 3. And I would like to know if this license would be used to enhance clamming or crabbing, and how that would be proposed, because these just occur naturally, and at present we actually do things against the clams and the crab. We pollute. At this present day, I cannot sell shellfish because the water is polluted. That is because of all the runoff from the dairy farms that come down. So these clams and crab occur naturally out in the ocean. We don't do anything to enhance it. I can't see how we could do anything to enhance it. Basically, we could do something to protect it if we would stop the polluting. The oyster industry, as I understand it, already pays for the testing. They do it all commercially. They grow them. They don't harvest them out there naturally. A lot of the clams that I've heard of, like on the people she was talking about, people taking all these clams up at seaside, and that is true. I've talked to a lot of people who say they have 600 or more in their freezers. I don't know how they came up to 600 or more, but most of them already have licenses, and these are people that fish and hunt already. And fishermen will do the same thing. They will change their clothes. They will do anything to get that extra fish in there. I know. I've been there for 24 years. I've watched it. So we already have a license for salmon, for all the, you know, for fishing, and people do these illegal things anyway. So simply putting a license on clamming is not going to stop them from changing clothes and going back the next, you know, to get more. And people come and use salmon that they pay a license and a tag for. They use salmon for crab bait. Instead, it's truly amazing. So wasting, having a license doesn't mean that they're not going to waste it. I already pay licenses for selling shellfish, for buying shellfish. So I'm sure some portion of that goes toward the testing and all of that already. So I'm already paying for that. Tourists are basically the ones that are going to be paying for this license. A lot of Oregonians are tourists. It's not just the out-of-state people. And we do get a lot of people from Washington that come down to do the clamming and the crabbing because they don't have to pay a license for it here. They can do it. I believe the day I talked to Mr. Beyer, right in front of me, I had a young couple from Vancouver, Washington, who had come down to go crabbing. Even though there's no crab right now because it's too muddy and there aren't any crab in the bay, they're still going to do it just for the fun of doing it, and it's free. They said if they had to get a license, they may as well stay in Washington and use their license that they're already getting there. They can come to Oregon. They like the Oregon coast better. So all the money they spend towards motels, restaurants, gas, all this extra money that these out-of-state people who were trying to put a license on, they won't come here. Why will they come here to pay another license fee? They'll just stay at home. If we wanted to do something to improve the situation for the clams, we could put it every other day, or a license plate number, or letters of the alphabet, or even not driving on the beach, not parking on the beach. The clams live in that sand on the beach. There we are driving on them by the hundreds and hundreds of cars out there. That does not enhance the clamming. Another the license for the tourists. With what's been, to my knowledge, people, the tourists have, like the rest of us, I think, well, in my business anyway, have less money now. A lot of people are unemployed. Unemployment is high. People are taking pay cuts in lots of different jobs. A lot of jobs are being moved out of the state. So the tourists that we get, they have less money to spend, because they're either making less money or they're out of work. This is one free thing they can do without spending money. And here we're going to slap them with where I don't know where they're going to get this extra money. I know it doesn't seem like a lot. Every time somebody wants to put a tax on something or raise it or something, they'll say, oh, it's just less than a cup of coffee a day. Well, I'll tell you, my coffee sales are down. Because people used to just be able to stop by, have a coffee or two, but now they have their coffee at home or in their motorhome. They'll plug into the power at my RV park, make their coffee there, bring it over and talk in the store. They don't pay for coffee there. It's that extra cup of coffee that they're paying for a tax or a license somewhere. A lot of people, after they go fishing or clamming, those tourists that are passing by, they come one day to go fishing, they'll say, what else is there to do? Well, there's clamming. There's always that clamming. They might stay an extra day just to go the next day and do the clamming thing. A lot of them, if they got to spend another license that's, you know, almost, you know, whatever it was, the fishing license was, a lot of them aren't going to bother doing that or spending the extra day. It's just not worth it for this trophy clam they're going to get. And as for clams, you know, giving away things, I don't think those are ours to give. They just grow out there naturally. We don't plant them. We don't feed them. We don't weed them. We don't do anything for them. We pollute them and drive on top of them. And that's not helping them at all. And And, you know, when I talked to Mr. Beyer, and he did say he does buy a fishing license, and so he's getting free clams now because there isn't a license on clams, so he's still going to get free clams later when there is a license. So some people will be getting free clams, other people will be paying for them. I don't know if this is exactly pertinent to the clamming issue, but I think it comes to the need for needing more money and trying to get it out of the tourist for clamming. I'm an independent. I vote a lot for Republican time because they are for no bigger growth in government, no more new taxes. That's my reason for that. I live in some of my buildings on my business are 100 years old or more, but we've been there 24 years and those, we still are in business and we still have our buildings because we do maintenance and we live at our means, you know, what we can afford. We don't go beyond it. I think when you put up the taxes on these people, like they're, I think at the same time as this going on, there's also a lodging tax proposal to hit the tourist with an extra statewide lodging tax, and it's only another cup of coffee. Every less cent that tourist has to spend at businesses like mine and motels, restaurants, coffee shops, whatever along the way, service stations, that's less money that we have to pay our taxes with. So it's not going to be more money. It's going to be coming out of the same spot someplace else. Somebody else, you know, the taxes that I pay, they're going to be less. That's going to be going into the same coffer, and that's going to be less. I don't know if I could make a recommendation. I would say think. You know, I've been there 24 years, coming on 25, and the only reason I can do that is because I've been successful. Every year our business has gone up. I think if my business was going down and I couldn't handle it anymore, it was being a little worse every year, I'd have to leave it or sell it or quit anyway. And I think, you know, we've had some really good times. Fishing was really good. The economy was really good. There should be savings there somewhere built up so that we wouldn't have to do this now, trying to scratch money out of where when everything is down. It's impossible to get extra money. It's going to all end up the same. So I think some of those people that were there for the last two seasons, two terms or whatever, they shouldn't be there anymore. If they couldn't get it, the state running good, when everything was good, they shouldn't be there now. Us paying them to keep doing the same thing and trying to take more money out of this turnip that we're having here. And I think that's pretty much it. I think I covered everything.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Any questions? Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I'll get your last name right either, Shirley, on the phone. And, you know, yeah, I guess we disagree on this issue. And thank you for coming over. You made a long drive today. Thank you for coming over and telling us.
Appreciate it, Shirley. I'm going to ask Bob Jacobson if he'll come up.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bob Jacobson. I live in Newport. This past spring, I was a member of Lindsey Ball's External Advisory Committee, a group composed of about 30 people from around the state that got together in Portland a couple times to talk about legislative concepts that the department should bring forward to this session. It was nearing the end of the last meeting, and the issue of requiring a fishing license or a special stamp to harvest shellfish hadn't been brought up, so I brought it up. It's been a long time concern of mine, and I told Lindsey that I was willing to personally go to bat to try to get something passed that would require either a license or a stamp of all those people in the state harvesting shellfish recreationally. That's the reason I'm here today. Let me just give you a little bit of background, if I could. I've lived in Newport for 35 years. I've been a very active recreational fisherman, hunter and fisherman here in the state. Served 8 years on the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission a few years back. Over the last 10 years, we've seen a tremendous increase in the recreational sport fishing pressure on shellfish all up and down the coast. And 2002 is a great example. During 2002, we had unprecedented levels of razor clams from the Columbia River South Jetty all the way to the Florence North Jetty. We had razor clams in Lincoln County in areas I hadn't seen them in 35 years. As an example, one extremely good tide in May, I was on Agate Beach, which is a little tiny beach in the north end of Newport, and counted 360-plus razor clam diggers in that one little section of beach. I'd never seen more than 67, most of whom were locals in the past. I then drove south to a little beach south of Walport. It's an area that traditionally has had no razor clams, and on that beach, and that same day, were over 200 people digging razor clams. My guess is that on that particular day in Lincoln County, we probably had 700 or 800 people digging razor clams. The same is true in the recreational fishery for Dungeness crab. Last October, I was motoring back down the bay after having fished for salmon in the morning and counted over 70 vessels in the month of October recreationally fishing for Dungeness crab in Yquinna Bay. Now, October is not a month that you'd expect to find many boats over there. In the past, maybe if you had 5 or 6 or 8 or 10 boats, that was absolute maximum. I counted over 70. Director Lindsey Ball was there that same day in his boat, and he counted an equal number. Alsea Bay is another example. Very small bay at Walport, mouth of the Alsea River. Has traditionally been a very good recreational crabbing area. Well, you might find a dozen or 15, maybe as many as 24 boats. I counted 55 boats on Alsea Bay on one tide in the middle of July. During 2002, I spent about 75 days clam digging, or parts of 75 days, clam digging or recreationally fishing for Dungeness crab, primarily in Alsea Bay and Yquinna Bay. The crabbing was excellent. The clamming was the best I've ever seen it. If I had to go to the retail market and purchase those same crabs and same clams that I dug recreationally, I'd pay between $8,000 and $10,000 at a retail market for that resource. What a bargain I got, because I didn't pay the state one red cent for harvesting that resource. In an era when the three state agencies directly involved in the management of the state's shellfish resources are struggling with their budgets, and I'm talking here about ODFW, Ag, and the state police, I and everyone else who participates in these fisheries should assume the responsibility for paying for them. A lack of dollars within these three state agencies translates directly to a lack of opportunity for all of us. Let me give you an example about what I'm talking about there. Love to dig razor clams, as I told you earlier, and in, I believe it was October, I knew the Lincoln County beaches were closed because the testing done by the Department of Agriculture indicated that domoic acid levels were too high to make those clams safe for human consumption. Generally, the line that they split the coast is at Yahats, and up to that point in time, all the beaches south of Yahats had remained open for razor clam digging. We've got some good beaches down there that we dig on. I thought, I better check before I go to make sure those beaches are still closed or still open. So I did, and found out that, as a matter of fact, the beaches were closed. So I called the Department of Ag to ask why the beaches were closed, assuming that they had taken tests and done this, they're taken some samples and done the testing on those clams from down there. And they said, as a matter of fact, we haven't. We closed those beaches on no data. We are so short on funds to do our testing and to do our monitoring, we simply didn't have the money to do those tests. So as a result, our opportunity to harvest from that section of the Oregon Ocean Beach was negated. Our I agree with Senate Bill 99 in concept. We need to require recreational shellfishers to have at least a fishing license. In my opinion, that doesn't carry this thing far enough because the estimates of additional revenues that it would generate are not sufficient to fund programs that are needed. And the last estimates I saw for requiring a recreational shellfish license, and these came from Chris Carter, ODFW economist, were someplace between $200,000 and $300,000 per biennium. Estimates of the revenue that might be generated from a $5 shellfish stamp or license, however, were about $1.2 million per biennium. That comes a lot closer to paying the bills. I'd personally be willing to spend whatever it takes, whatever is necessary, for that stamp or endorsement, so long as I could be assured that the revenue is dedicated to those programs that were tied directly to the management, monitoring, and enforcement of those fisheries. My contention is that the state police and ag also need to be considered in this equation along with ODFW because their services are extremely important. As I indicated earlier, ag does testing on razor clams from along the beaches for both domoic acid and paralytic shellfish poisoning. State police presence on the beach is absolutely necessary, in my opinion, to cut back on some of the violations that are currently going on. At this time, while I support the concept embraced in SB 99, I think it needs to be amended to require a separate shellfish stamp or endorsement, just as Senator Dukes indicated to you in an earlier presentation. I'm suggesting $5 as she did, but once again, I'd be willing to pay whatever it takes. That's the only way we're going to generate the revenue necessary to fund all of these very much needed programs. Thank you.
Thank you. Question? Bob, I appreciate you coming and sharing with us. You certainly know a lot more about the issue than I do. Looks like Wendy and Borden and Blake Ferris are on the list.
Hi, my name is Wendy Ferris, and I don't own a fishery or a marina or have a lot to do with the clamming and crabbing, but we do own a small business and have been in business for 7 years. We work out of the state park, and we observe a lot of the tourism that is out there. We get a lot of people from out of state, and they're always talking about how they love to come for a weekend, or they enjoy the outdoor activities. Many of them are taking their families clamming for the first time. It being free, they have made the special trip to come from Washington, or it's just a good attraction without having to buy licenses. I'm afraid that a lot of tourism, if they had to buy licenses, would opt to just stay in Washington or stay wherever they came from. Oregon has a lot to offer, and it's one of the last frontiers of not having to pay for licenses. Another point, which might not be a real serious point, but something people might not have thought of, I've met some homeless people out in that area, and we've given them food and kind of talked to them and asked them, what do you do? And they did clam, and I don't know what would happen if they had to have a license to get the clams. I believe that shellfish and crabbing and clamming, they're getting a lot of Oregonians and Americans in touch with nature. It's one of the few things you can do that doesn't cost money in these days with... I would have to also agree with the speech I heard about the taxes for a cup of coffee. I mean, gasoline to park here to get to this meter. I emptied out my whole pocket of change to park my car. It just seems like every little thing costs money, and I don't know if this is the place to talk about the Bible, but animals and things were put here for us to eat. I remember back to my history days of the feudal system, and my husband and I, we do buy fishing licenses, elk tags, everything for food for our families. And if you would like to come to our house anytime, we have venison, or you know, we do eat. And it seems like this is just a little, not just $5, and oh, just a little bit for the hunting licenses, and we want to protect nature. But it feels like someday, as we progress, it's only going to be the rich that can go get their food. I witnessed many people out clamming on the Nehalem Bay. And from what I see, I'm sure it's different in all of Oregon, but I see families out there just having a fun time. I never see anybody sneaking back in different clothes. And I'm not saying it doesn't happen. I'm sure there are those people that do that. But all in all, it's just a fun recreation. Another thing about that really concerns me is any time a law is put into effect or a fee or there needs to be some enforcement. And I do personally witness, and you can put this on record, I witness police go out there only on sunny days, and they go out there two and three at a time, and they walk clear to the end of the spit, and they lay out in the sun. And our taxpayers are paying them to lay there hoping someone will come by doing illegal crabbing. I am so infuriated with the over... I used to be a Democrat for the working people. Now, however, with government, I have become Republican. I want to spend my money. I don't need someone taking my money and spending it and frivolously wasting it. And if this money for the licenses, if we are doing this to stop people, you know, to protect our resources, I agree we should do at all costs whatever it takes to protect the resources. But will this do the intentions? Will it stop the illegal people? Are we not creating more money we're going to have to spend to enforce it? Are we hurting the tourism? Will we be wasting more taxpayers' money? I also hear the money is not delegated to go to the shellfish. I was a little unclear where this money would just trickle. If we're so worried about the shellfish, why isn't it going to help them? And I hear that some of the people for it will do whatever it costs to, it's $5 right now, but they would be happy to pay whatever it costs to help protect it. Maybe we could propose a good buddy system, and all of us Oregonians that are very concerned, maybe we could be good Samaritans and kind of overlook and say, hey, you know, this is our resource, and that I just think people should have more morals and not have to be... I can't think of the words. Maybe if I had more time, I could think, but maybe get a feel for that.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Questions? Next on my list is Kay Brown. Can Kay come up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Kay Brown. I'm representing the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife. And as you are probably aware, the department supports the governor's budget, and that budget does not include fees for shellfish. But we would like to provide the committee with some information that we think may be helpful for your use. As Judith mentioned, Senate Bill 99 requires an angling license to take any shellfish such as clams, crabs, and mussels. This bill would not impact people who currently hold an angling license, as we've discussed. It would require people taking shellfish in Oregon who do not fish to help pay for management and protection of shellfish. And I think Bob Jacobson mentioned our estimates currently is that the bill would increase revenue to the department by about $200,000 to $300,000 a biennium. We are having to make some estimates since we don't have a lot of information about the numbers of people that would be involved and don't have angling licenses now, but currently that's our estimate. Oregon is the only coastal state in the nation without a shellfish license. 5 of the 22 coastal states require the purchase of a fishing license, just a fishing license only, similar to what this bill calls for, and 2 more require the purchase of a saltwater fishing license. If you look at the chart on page 3 of the testimony I passed out, it lists the fees that the various states require around the country. The majority of the states have a separate recreational shellfish license, and the minimum shellfish license is $5. About 200,000 people take shellfish recreationally in Oregon each year in roughly 980,000 days of recreational activity. The associated Oregon economic impact of recreational shellfish activity is $17 to $32 per participant trip per day. The annual Oregon economic impact of recreational shellfish activity is between $18 and $34 million per year. And to put that in perspective, the annual economic impact of recreational ocean salmon harvest was about $8 million in 2002. So you can see that it has a huge economic impact to the state. At the present time, the funding that supports the department shellfish work comes principally from the Commercial Fish Fund, with a small amount from federal sources and other anglers. Our current activities focus primarily on commercial shrimp, crabfish, and developing shellfish commercial fisheries. Very little effort is funded for recreational shellfish management. At the present time, approximately one half of one person is dedicated to the management of the huge fishery coastwide. If you compare that to Washington, Washington funds 40 to 50 employees that are dedicated to recreational shellfish management. Senator Dukes mentioned a single shellfish biologist. That biologist position was lost as a result of the general fund reductions in the next biennium. And over the past few decades, we have lost additional positions that had been dedicated to recreational shellfish. Consequently, very little has been done with existing resources, and decades of data collection and trend analysis has been halted over the years. The department has been unable to continue field monitoring to assure the shellfish resource is not over-harvested or impacted by environmental factors. And of special concern to the department is our lack of ability to prevent and manage invasive species that impact our shellfish populations. A significant wastage concern has also arisen, especially on the north coast, shore coast, where bountiful razor clam harvests have attracted thousands of inexperienced users. Obviously, we also are unable to provide a lot of the public education and enforcement that we'd like to see with shellfish. On the other hand, when the resource is abundant, we also don't have the ability to detect that and make additional harvest available to fishers who might like to participate in additional fisheries. Those are our comments. I'd be happy to answer any of your questions.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Senator Fisher.
Notice in the exhibit that you put back here that two of the states have prohibitions against any out-of-state person taking any of the shellfish, apparently, or at least in the categories that they license for. What would be your opinion on having a prohibition against out-of-state people doing any taking of shellfish?
Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, I don't think the department has a position right now, but, and I'm not a lawyer, but my understanding is that we don't have the ability to prohibit non-residents from participating.
Well, here's New Hampshire.
I understand that.
$27 fee for residents. General angling license required. No non-resident harvest allowed. And North Carolina, shellfish license for residents only and none for the other. So why, if a couple of states might stop that? I don't know whether North Carolina doesn't allow for a harvest or allows visitors to come and do it for nothing. Would seem rather strange that they'd allow them to have in, so I'm guessing they have a prohibition against non-residents, too.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, I don't know the details. I certainly can do some additional research on that for you if you'd like and check with our legal counsel, but my understanding is that we have not been allowed the ability to restrict opportunities for non-residents.
Senator Meyer has a question.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if you can actually answer this question, okay, but I was thinking about this, if this bill is to pass in its current form for crabbing, normally done in a boat, you have four people in a boat, three of which have licenses, one does not, they're running nine pots. Could you have any idea of the enforcement of that? That fourth person, they have to sit there and not touch a rope? Would you be allowed to pull the ropes? They'd be restricted to three limits because they only have three licensed crabbers in the boat? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Senator Shields, Senator Beyer, it is something that we have talked about somewhat. I believe Lieutenant Clary's here in the audience, and he might be able to answer the enforcement aspect of it better than I can.
Let's have him just come up here and answer the question while it's fresh.
Thank you, Chair Shields, Senator Beyer. For the record, my name is Dave Clary, Oregon State Police, Fish and Wildlife Section. In reviewing this bill, that's one of our concerns, is having some clear intent by this body or who writes the rules. How do you want to impose it? We basically inserted the shellfish license into the normal angling regulations with some definition changes. So children under the age of 14 wouldn't need a license. So if you've got four people in the boat, two of them are children, obviously those two could take part without a license. But then if you have four adults, we would look at you're limited to three rings per person. So at least three people in the case of nine rings would need licenses. But if the fourth person was a boat driver, which is an integral part of that operation, would he theoretically need a license? So, we kind of want some direction from some people that, you know, this is what we intended to do, or we'd simply go by the number of rings or pots or whatever. And we'd probably put that into the asset that would be put in the regulations as we went forward with this.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Senator Fisher.
show you how much I know about fishing. Are you allowed to have more than one pole?
Currently, no, sir.
That's what I was under the impression. Why would you allow somebody to have three pots if they're... I mean, is the pot any different than a pole?
Well, as the fishery has evolved and regulations have passed for recreational activities, we've allowed up to three rings or pots in combination for anglers and or crabbers. That's part of the restrictions. Now, that is one place people do use fishing poles to catch crab, and they can use three poles to crab. But if they're taking part in an angling or fishing situation, they're limited at this time to one line per person.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, sir.
What happens if they happen to catch a fish on a crab line? Or is that possible? I'm, again, probably showing my ignorance of the...
Currently, if that were to happen, I think it's fairly rare, but if it were to happen and they didn't have a license, they'd have to release it.
Any other questions?
Yes, one more.
Go ahead.
When we're talking about an angling license here, we're talking about not a separate $5 license. We're just talking about an angling license.
I believe in this bill, yes, it would be an addition to the angling license that only, not a separate license.
And anyone that was not required to have a fishing license by age or whatever restriction would not have to...
Yeah, as I said, Senator Fisher, is the way I've read the bill is we basically took our angling regulation, our license requirements, and we've inserted language to allow the take of shellfish. And so all of the parameters we have currently for an angling license would then apply to shellfish. So you would have exclusions for your juvenile. You would have the senior citizens break on license fees and those types of things, disabled veterans. Those would all be in place, is my understanding under this bill. So you would have some difference in prices, et cetera.
Thank you.
Sure, that does lead to one more question, because what good then is another $200,000 or $300,000 that basically couldn't even pay for a couple people to run up and down the coast to be, by the time you got your administrative expenses out of that, looks to me like we're not even getting a fair trade for a dollar.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, obviously the Ways and Means Committee would make the final decision on how those dollars were spent, but certainly we would anticipate using those dollars for management of recreational shellfish. It would probably fund a single shellfish biologist. It would give us the ability to look at harvest management and help with providing additional information to the public, those sorts of things.
Mr. Chair, yes. With my knowledge of what it takes to provide information to the public, it would take that $300,000 just to make one mailing to the general public. Scant mailing at that.
Thank you, Senator Fisher. I had a couple questions I actually saved for last, and while I have you both here, I'd like to express them. Earlier, Kay, you mentioned the biologist that was dropped, and that was just in this most recent round of fiscal woes that the state has, or when was that?
That's correct, Senator Shields. We recently had a shellfish biologist retire, and that position is the position that was offered up as part of the general fund cuts.
What did that person do that benefited the fishery, the citizens of Oregon? Can you describe a little more specifically what that person did?
I'll try. In talking with Patty Burke, who's our manager for the Marine Resources Program, she does not envision that if a new biologist was funded, that it would do the same functions as that position has been doing. The position has been primarily focused on habitat types of activities where they are reviewing permits for estuaries and looking at a variety of of habitat issues. And what her thought was is that a new position would be more involved in the active management of crab, of razor clams, of bay clams, of mussels, so that they would actually be looking at the biology of those critters to make sure, certain that we weren't over-harvesting them, that we weren't under-harvesting them. So it, I think her intent is to change the focus of that position.
Okay. Well, several people have talked about fiscal impact. I'd like to look at it from a different angle, and that is, do you have any sense of what might be lost to tourism if we initiate this kind of fee? I mean, you've had people testify this morning that maybe there would just plain be less people that'll come to the coast. What is your take? Either one of you are welcome to comment on that.
Senator Shields, we've not done any kind of an extensive survey, and we don't really have any information to provide to you that would give you a good estimate on that.
I guess maybe I'm saving the toughest for last. You've heard two senators this morning. You've referenced both bills either directly or indirectly. Do either of you have comments, just objective comments? I mean, both Senator Beyer and Senator Dukes are friends of mine, and I'm just trying to figure out, you know, what's the best way to go, and I don't know if I should be so blunt as to ask you to do a comparison of the benefits of each bill, but that's kind of what I'd like to get a sense of, if that's okay.
Senator Shields, you did save the toughest question for last. I have great respect for both senators. I have worked with Senator Dukes for many, many years. I've been involved in the 9 sessions where a shellfish bill has been introduced by the legislature, and we have discussed the issues back and forth. I think the main difference between the bills is the amount of revenue that they raise. We certainly have concerns about the ability to enforce, the ability to protect public safety, and our ability to provide the biological information that we think is needed. On the other hand, we do have to respect that we support the governor's budget, and so we're not here to support either bill.
Okay. Any other questions?
Just one more for my own information on the issue. You do set limits now, don't you, for the average catch or the different, how many they can take and the size and that kind of thing. So there are restrictions on what they can do, but how do you restrict and have any idea of how many are being caught when you have no restriction on licenses or no tags that can be punched or anything like that to show how many actually have been taken? So that even if you had a limit of 5 of this or 10 of that, how, when you just have open licenses or open opportunities, do you have any idea at all of how many you're actually taking total?
Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher, the way we would do that is we would have, assuming that we had the funding for the biologists, they would be on the ground actually interviewing the people who are taking shellfish, getting an idea of the catch rate, numbers of clams or crabs or whatever that they're taking per day, per boat, per vessel, whatever it is, and we can get some fairly accurate estimates of what the harvest has been based on those numbers. That will give us some trend information in terms of the actual total populations. So without a tag of some sort that where someone would actually write down the numbers, then that's the way that we would estimate those populations.
Thank you for answering all of our questions. I guess you,
Chair, that doesn't sound like a very reasonable way of knowing, because with one biologist and as long of a coast as we have, it would seem like it would be very, very difficult to be able to be in enough places at once to get any real true idea for this.
I understand. I hear you. I guess, excuse the pun, but with that, we can let you off the hook.
Thank you, sir.
We still have a couple people that we need to get to who've signed up, and it is getting late. So I'm going to ask Peter, Roscoe?
Yeah.
Come on up for a minute. Yeah, it actually may help me to finish up a little quicker if I ask Phil Donovan if he comes up too, because he's the last one signed up to testify. And I've got a request to add one person to the list, so I'm going to ask her to come up at the same time too. Who knows, I may be getting mortal enemies sitting up here together, but Jane, I'm afraid to try the last name. Lovely. Wants to be added to the witness list. That was Shirley? I don't know who this is. Somebody asked to be added to the list. Huh? Oh, okay. So come on up and have a seat. But let's go from my right to left here.
All right. Senator and members of the committee, thank you. My name is Peter Roscoe, and I'm involved in a couple of different ways with this issue. I kind of started the Friends of the Razor Clam, what we call FORCE, and also I've been on a committee, an advisory committee with the ODFNW examining this issue. I really got involved as I owned a restaurant and lounge in Gearhart and saw as the clamming was reopened on the Classic Beaches, saw firsthand what was going on, and just got tired of people complaining about it because there were so many egregious violations occurring several times a day for months on each tide. Finally, we just said, well, let's start something and try and address this issue. And then in so doing, that's the first two pages of my little handout. That's something that happened last summer. We certainly think that the current bill, Senate Bill 99, is kind of going in the right direction, but I just don't think it does enough. As I've been become involved in this process, I've listened to different people from Ag Department and the State Police and the biologists, and I really have a sense of their plight. Their job is to protect our resource, and they're not getting, it's just a drag on their budget to do it. And we have one of the most unique coastlines anywhere. We're the only state in the union that doesn't require a shellfish harvesting license. We just give it away. And I'm a restaurateur, a chef and a restaurateur. I have to put a price and have to find the fortitude within me to say this is what it's worth. And with all due respect to the people that are renting boats, the free ride's over. This is what it's worth to my children and their children, and for me, we have this resource. We don't to say that nature provides this resource to us and we don't do anything is just, I don't feel that that's a responsible statement. We don't have the biologists to tell us what the science is because we have one biologist. He's trying to figure out what to do about an invader clam in the mid-Columbia. He doesn't have time to tell you what's going on in an estuary in Coos Bay. Or, he's one guy scrambling around to cover all of these different aspects of these resources. And, if the Ag Department doesn't have the ability to pay the dues with the FDA and test the beaches, then the beaches are going to be closed. Nobody is going to benefit by that. And certainly not the people that rent boats in the estuaries. As far as chasing off tourist dollars because they can't come here, because it's not free anymore. The reality is, for people that like to razor clam, for instance, there are very limited days that they can raise their clam in the state of Washington. Our beaches are open for months. So if they really like to raise their clam, they'll pay the extra little fee, just as Oregonians pay a little extra fee to go up there and dig razor clams, and I did it. $19 so that I can go dig for 9 or 12 days a year? No problem. $19, I can barely go buy razor clams at the market and feed my family for $19. So I'll certainly go up there and get a bunch of limits. So the ability for a Washingtonian, for instance, to pay an out-of-state fee and come here is going to give them the ability to come for as long as our season is open, not just those specific days as they do it up there. If the Ag Department doesn't do the studies on the water in the estuaries and the toxic levels in the clams, then those beaches are going to have to be closed. That is therefore going to create a situation where people are going to go out and poach because they feel the need to do that. And that's going to create an enforcement issue, more pressure on people. These guys are doing something on a closed beach, so now we got to go chase them. It's just a never-ending kind of spiral downward. I think that in answer to Senator Fisher's question about a recommendation, I'm not a bureaucrat, so I could say what I want. I think this bill has got to be tabled, and we got to look at Senator Dukes' bill. To me, the most logical way to fix this, to clear away this wreckage, is to create a separate shellfish harvesting license. That there are many people in the Friends of the Razor Clam, for instance, in Clatsop County that are seniors. They have no interest in going bass fishing or getting a salmon or a sturgeon tag. What they like to do is go clamming. And they are more than willing to pay serve a nominal little fee, and especially if those funds are dedicated to these three departments whose job it is to oversee the resource. I think that's basically my feelings about it.
Okay, thank you very much. Phil?
Mr. Chair, could I have a question? You do speak for this group?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so not only for yourself, but yeah, the group. I want to get that on record.
Absolutely. That was absolutely clear that we, Friends of the Razor Clam, were specifically interested in a separate shellfish harvesting license, and in particular, we had many members who did not want it to fall under the general fishing license. They wanted to have the ability to go and get this separate license.
Okay. Phil?
Thank you, Chair Shields, members of the committee. Good morning. My name is Phil Donovan. I'm here on behalf of the Northwest Sport Fishing Industry Association and the Association of Northwest Steelheaders. Like Bob Jacobson, I served on the External Budget Review Committee with the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I can tell you that the idea was brought up and unanimously endorsed that something has to be done. This legislation puts us, though, in a bit of a quandary. Last session, the legislation was introduced that basically said you have to have an angling license or you've got to have a shellfish tag. Kind of cut right between the two pieces of legislation that Senator Beyer and Senator Dukes are proposing. First, the reason why we support this concept. First off, for those people who are buying an angling license, they're making a contribution to the management of our fish and wildlife at the Department of Fish and Wildlife. For those people who are going out and not making any sort of contribution, we're kind of ignoring the fact that these resources, these shellfish, have tremendous value, and they do require management. And in particular, they require law enforcement. And we're all aware of the rather dramatic effects that the state's budget situation has caused at the Oregon State Police Department. So I'd also like to share with you another thought about why an angling license makes sense. It does, as Senator Beyer said earlier, it adds value to that license. And frankly, as an angling organization, we're kind of interested in seeing some of those crabbers and clammers get a little more interested in fishing, too. And it does create that added value. So the recommendation that I would propose to this committee is that, first off, the concept is past due. It's long overdue. We need to make this happen. And I think the suggestion would be to move this legislation to the Ways and Means process. And frankly, I think we're all aware of the political balance that exists within the Oregon State Senate, and that a good consensus compromise solution will be found. But please don't sit on this, because that's happened to this legislation far too often in the past.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fisher.
Yeah, Phil. Under your logic about the people that want to go clamming or crabbing or shell fishing and ought to take an interest in fishing, if that's the case, then you ought to have a turnstile down there, and everybody that goes on the beach ought to have an interest in what goes on out there, and they ought to chip in a bucket every time they go out there. This is something that really bothers me. Why people can go and enjoy everything on the beach or everything in the woods and that kind of thing, and it's dependent only on the hunters and fishermen to support it. And so I follow what you're saying to a certain extent, but I get tired of seeing it done on the same backs of the same small bit of population. If this is public, and if we're supposed to be supporting the public use of these things, then it shouldn't be on the backs of just the ones that want to go crabbing and have to buy a fishing license, or on the fishermen that want to go fishing and have to buy a crab license, or vice versa. And if we're going to follow that theory, then why don't we have to buy a hunting license if we buy a fishing license, so that we can help out the hunter or the other wildlife? I mean, this kind of reasoning either has got to go all the way, or it shouldn't go anywhere.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fisher,
you ought to have to buy a $5 license to use it in wildlife or landscapes.
You raise a very, very good point. The fact is the hunters and anglers have been paying the freight. Ideas have been kicked around about creating wildlife viewing stamps and whatnot. They have not gotten traction, and that's unfortunate, because the general public's contribution to management, whether it's deer and elk or salmon and steelhead or crabs and clams, is anemic. They make practically no contribution, and you're exactly right. The good thing about what this concept does, though, is it does expand those who would contribute to the Department of Fish and Wildlife, that being those clammers and crabbers who are not purchasing any sorts of hunting or fishing licenses. So I'd love to go all the way, but you know how difficult this process can be to get everything done at once. We'll take an incremental step forward. We would consider that progress.
Well, thank you, Phil. We're running short here in time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
So one more witness this morning.
Yeah. My name is Jean La Violette, and I'm a marina owner, part with my wife on the Ilam Bay. And I want to say, all these guys that are concerned about the use of the clam, nobody's mentioned that the commercial use those clam for bait. Like, they'll take the razor clam and use them for bait in the crab pot. And the person that gets those clams, he only pays, like, I think it's $35 to get a license. And he'll probably take more in one day than 100 tourists will take. Because I've only been clamming one time. And it had been shut for quite a few years because it was really poor. And then last year it got good. And the Fish and Wildlife Bunch that runs the Fish and Wildlife that wants more money didn't have the brain, because it's so good, they left it open every day. They could have had one day, 3-4 days closed. That's how you you manage your resource. And another thing, like where I live in Tillamook County, the one that have been using the water the most are the people that are raising oyster. and they pay to have the water tested. They're the one, their license, and what they pay are the business tax. So these people that say that everybody comes down there, takes clam, they don't pay nothing. They don't buy gas, they don't pay the motel room. No, no. They just come down the coast, go down the beach, take their 50 clam and leave. You know, it's not a... But anyway, so about 15 years ago where I live, they started checking the water. Probably been doing it longer, but... So they'd put in a big boat, one of them $30,000-$40,000 jet, with a deputy driving, and then a person with a little cup of water, and they go along. There's my dock at the mouth of the river. They'll go up the river, take a sample. Well, there's a dock pretty near every place where they take a sample. So you can hang a cup every one of them place you want a sample. Same thing as a person that takes a water measure. And you'd save a hell of a lot of money. Because you wouldn't have that fancy... That's where they spend their money from license. The Marine Board hands it out to the Sheriff County, and they ride around with them big fancy four-wheel drive. And that's what we're talking about here, the cost. So that's part of that money. But anyway, the one that I've had it the most to the river are the, like in Tillamook, Bay, there's been four new oyster farms since I've been there. Permit issued. And what we talk, what we're, the reason we're talking about the tourists is we deal mostly with tourists, but the one that'll go clamming like last year was an exceptional year. Like I said, it was so good and they left it open every day. Nobody slowed down anything. And the people that are all concerned about these clam, why don't they say something about, my son runs 500 pot with a commercial crab boat, and every one of his pot is baited with these precious razor clam that people pay. They use them for bait. That's what they do with them. All these people that are so, about their resource, why don't they bring that up? You know, that's all I want to say. I want to thank you.
I want to thank you.
I'm not used to speaking, but...
Thank you for coming and sharing with us. I don't think there's any more testimony. At least I don't have a record of it, and so I'm going to...
Mr. Chair, just a comment. Again, you know, it really seems like what we ought to be doing is putting together some kind of a committee, and this can be a volunteer thing. I think there's enough people interested in it to volunteer, and people that know what's going on from one end to the other. Now, I don't know about yourself, but I learned several things today. I had no idea they were using razor clams for any kind of bait, because I have no background or knowledge of this, and we're dealing there. I don't know... maybe Senator Beyer has a lot more knowledge of this than I do. I don't know how much of the coast he has, but we're dealing with something here that we don't even have a remote idea of the overall concept of what we're dealing with. And it would seem to me it would make a lot more sense than to come up with a bill that maybe only going to increase $200,000 or $300,000, which basically doesn't even remotely answer the problem, to something that would actually be meaningful, and to find out whether perhaps is it really necessary to use razor clam this kind of thing for bait? Are there other baits that are available? Those are things that I have no way of knowing. But we could, it seems like, have a lot better idea of the overall use and knowledge of this issue if we've got some people that are knowledgeable, some of the consumer folks, some of the people that are operating businesses over there that deal with these things constantly. Some of the people are actually out there fishing and using these and needing these products, and go from there with something that perhaps might answer the question a whole lot more fully. And if we do have to have some control of this and some type of extra money to do it, then we would be in a lot better position to know how much we'd have to charge and who all would have to pay it.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I
Senator Fisher represents a heck of a lot more of the coast than I do.
Well, I just got it, I haven't had no chance to brief myself on these things.
It is correct. And I'm sure the department could tell us how many commercial clammers there are. And I do know, as a person who enjoys digging razor clams, that when you are on the beach, you have one person carrying around a great big bag of clams, and he's a commercial clammer, and the rest of us all have a little bitty bag of clams, we hope. And you said you've tried to dig them before, too, Mr. Chair. But
mainly all I did was follow former Representative Terry Thompson around. He's the one that knew how to do it.
But I'm sure the department has the numbers of how many commercial clamming licenses there are, and we can get that information and use that, because that is the main use of the commercially dug clams is for crab bait. That's true.
Well, listen, I've learned a lot this morning. I can adjourn this hearing right now, but I guess I'm listening to Senator Fisher, and he is suggesting possibly some kind of a group that ought to get together and talk about this from various angles and maybe come back with something that is more comprehensive. At least that's what I heard you say.
Well, it sounds like we have at least two bills that deal with this issue coming from a little different angle. And
what do you expect from anglers?
I'm sorry, it was unintentional.
It wasn't.
But with ODF and W involved, and perhaps if we weren't overworking our staff, we could have the staff administrator more or less put the legislature out of the picture and have the group that knows what they're doing with this thing come and tell us what to do.
Well, you know, Senator Fisher, you've got an idea there in the sense that both Senator Dukes and Senator Beyer have had an opportunity this morning to put forward their cases. Maybe some interested parties could get together. Maybe I should ask Judith if, and I'm saying this in front of the group today, if there are some people that would like to meet with her and try to compare the two approaches and see what we can get, and certainly invite input from Senator Beyer and Senator Duke, so maybe we could go that route. And so what I'm saying right now is if you have some further interest, call Judith at
503-986-1688.
Okay. Again, in case they didn't have their pencils out.
Pencils ready. 503-986-1688 is my direct phone line.
Now, I want to hear back from Judith how many volunteers, takers she's got for this kind of a work group concept. I like Senator Fisher's idea of getting some knowledge, not just from the legislators, the professionals, but some of the real people out there. And within a week, I want to know how many people are interested in getting together in that kind of a work group. Okay?
Good idea.
Comment?
I would just have to say that I have opposed this license fee in the past simply because, to me, it's the last bastion of where a family can go without having to be totally licensed and regulated. But it has never made sense to me in a situation where they have no way of counting really or really keeping track of how many they have, how to set a limit, how you know whether that limit's being reasonable or unreasonable. I mean, they could set 50, and if you could only go out there and find five, what good does it have 50 limit if there's ability to get 250, but you can only afford to have 50 taken? It's rough to know, and then you don't limit the licenses. You don't say, well, we've got 10,000 that can be taken, so we're only going to allow so many licenses of 50 to be able to go out there.
As the newest member of the Coastal Caucus, perhaps Senator Fisher should be
able to. Yeah, this would be a change of pace for him, who usually chairs Human Services. Kind of a fishy job to get in. What I'm going to do is stick with it. And Senator Fisher, if you want to be involved in that, you can. Although you yourself,
well, my feeling is, and as a committee chair and the ways I've dealt with situations similar to this, I stay out of it, but I keep in contact with my administrator.
Right.
And if somebody's getting a little obstreperous or out of line, I kind of give them a little direction as to put it in line and keep the pressure on to come up with something.
Well, the one thing
it there, but I think some of these things, the less we interfere as legislators, the better chance we've got of having some reasonable thing come of getting the users and the people that are always involved there and forcing them to come to make an issue, bring an issue to us that they've thrashed out themselves.
Right. Nobody likes it when they make decisions.
That's right. We've got a classic formula for doing nothing, which means that we've had two different concepts. Unless there's compromise, that would end up in nothing. We've got one member of the committee that's historically been against the issue, and Senator Corcoran has been talking and listening, even though he hasn't been able to be here this morning, to this issue. So we're in a position where we can easily go nowhere unless we have some kind of a work group. I have heard several people oppose, but I've also heard several people this morning say, we've got to do something. And yet we have not been able to define very well what that something ought to be. So that's the parameters. I want people to call Judith. We'll figure out how to move forward. But she's given her number a couple times, and I won't ask her to risk her life with any more recitations. Thank you very much for your time this morning on Senate Bill 99, and our committee is adjourned.